And welcome back to Cinema Vino.
Ukulaka Lakey.
Exactly. In case you're wondering, that's our new ukulele theme.
Aloha.
I've had that ukulele for years, and I wanted to put it to some use.
So I don't want to lay it.
Also, the percussion you're hearing there is Mediterranean sea salt and peppercorn shakers from Walmart.
Ooh. Sound delicious.
If anybody wants that recipe, you can find it on our website. So
S&P, that's for me.
Exactly. So we are going to talk about Green Knight for this particular mini pod.
Yeah.
Mini pod. Fuck yourself.
How many pod?
Jeez.
And we're still drinking this at Sunday Funday, so we're still drinking bubbly. For this one, we are doing the De Favre Prosecco. And most Proseccos tend to be either extra dry or root on the drier side. And so that's kind of how this one is. A little bit fruity, a little bit refreshing, but still pretty dry. And bubbly can be fruity yet dry, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, kind of.
Engelbert Humperdinck.
Yes. But this would make an excellent mimosa for our earlier conversation about mimosas. This is probably about 12 bucks, I think, 12, 13 bucks. Ooh. So it's a little bit pricey for mimosa. I think a Domaine St. Vincent, which I think is around 10 bucks.
Yeah, about 10, yeah.
That would be an ideal mimosa. Domaine St. Vincent's out of New Mexico. Very good, brut, bubbly. Another little fun fact about bubbly. Some people know this, some people don't. It has to originate from the Champagne region of France to be called Champagne. Everything else is just sparkling wine.
Yeah. I did not know that.
Yes. Yeah. Milwaukee is Algonquin.
Well, it's like Star Trek: Next Generation. Yeah.
So yeah, everything else in the world, like, you know, Prosecco is just bubbly. It's not champagne. I think there's one of those cheapo California ones that claims to be champagne, but they're breaking a big rule by doing that.
Motherfucker.
I knew one of them, one of those vineyards, whatever houses, they were like grandfathered in.
Yeah.
And it might have been like Cook's or J. Roger.
One of those headache fuels.
Yeah, it's like they were able to like, they can call it champagne because they were grandfathered into whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Champagne region of France looks at them and they're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do they call themselves, champagne?
Yeah.
The $5.99 bottle.
They're cursing our brand.
Yeah.
I will have the cold duck champagne, please.
Buy a whole bunch of mums.
The flowers or the bubbly? Or both?
I've gone.
But yeah, everything in France is region specific, like cognac, Chablis, Burgundy, Champagne, Armagnac, all that stuff has to come from a very specific area, or it can't be called whatever it is. So champagne, it definitely falls in that category. So a little fun fact.
The more you know.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the Green Knight, based on the classic medieval literature, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which is an Arthurian tale.
It's a poem.
Yes.
Yeah.
A poem by an anonymous author.
Yep.
So, which I read in the 10th. The grade, 11th grade, somewhere in there.
It was some sort of humanities mandatory reading at some point.
Same.
Yeah. AP classes or...
Yeah, I don't think I read it. I mean, I read like Beowulf, but I don't think
Like I said, AP classes.
This is for the elite, Trav.
Wow.
Trav is. First of all.
First of all, true.
Mm-hmm. Ouch.
I don't even think which I was in AP English, Travis, and I don't think it was ever assigned. Wow. Yeah, but for some reason, our teacher let us watch a lot of movies, too, so that was kind of cool.
Our high school was elite.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, yeah,
you guys went to Oklahoma schools.
We went to Oklahoma public schools.
We were the studliest of the studs.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look where we all are now.
Yeah.
Sitting around with a podcast.
Drinking Prosecco and talking about Beowulf.
With Angelina and Jolie? Yeah.
Exactly. Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. This is a fairly modest budgeted movie. I read between 15 and 20 million.
Yeah, that's all.
Produced for A24 feature film, so it's kind of independently based.
I love almost everything that comes out of A24.
They're good. Yep. Yeah.
See, I didn't realize they're their own deal. Like,
yeah,
they're
their own production company, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, and they do a lot of like, not low budget, but yeah, more...
modestly budgeted.
Yeah, fiscally conservative movies.
Yeah. It's like Lebowski. It is our most affordable receptacle.
Yeah.
Did they do The Witch?
Witch.
Well, yeah, what?
The Witch. I'll look it up.
We'll do some research.
They did Midsummer. They did
tons of stuff. Yeah. I've seen their logo on a ton. I want to say they did a Beale Street Could Talk, which won Academy Awards 2 years ago.
Yeah, and they did Minari, which shot locally here in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was... They won Golden Globes or...
Yeah, that won tons of awards.
Academies.
Yeah, like, you know, tons of acting awards, like Ensemble Awards.
Kids' Choice Awards.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Blockbuster Entertainment Awards.
Those are big.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Golden MTV Popcorn Awards. Yeah. Yeah, they beat out Megan Thee Stallion for...
Well, they're called MVAs, guys. Okay, so...
Exactly.
It was A24.
Huh. And so, this is starring Dev Patel, who you may know from Slumdog Millionaire, actually, the star of that film.
I did not know that.
He's come a long way.
Yeah. Very different role from that.
And Prince Zuko from the adaptation of Last Airbender.
Nobody saw it.
Yeah, I have not seen that, actually.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah, you still won't watch the series because you're a fucking dick. I'm sorry.
We watched the first 5 or 6 episodes.
Damn. Yeah, and you didn't continue.
Yeah, there's like 4 more seasons to go.
You know what? I'm kind of butthurt. Let's move on.
Okay.
Let's move on.
Moving on. And so basically, to kind of summarize, Sir Gawain is the nephew of King Arthur. He's the son of Morgan Le Fay, who's King Arthur's stepsister, half-sister. It depends on which version of legend you read. And so the basic framework of the story of Sir Gawain is kind of this, I don't know what the word is, but kind of carefree, you know, doesn't give a shit.
Layabout.
Yeah. Kind of spoiled aristocrat at the beginning of the movie and at the beginning of the story. That's kind of the gist of him, is he really wants to prove himself worthy of his famous relatives.
He just whores around, doesn't really do anything worthwhile.
Drinks and parties and kind of stumbles into bed.
He's my hero.
Yeah.
I mean, he's everybody's hero. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the everyman.
Yeah.
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 And so he wants to prove himself, and he is at a, you know, banquet, Christmas fest for King Arthur and his court. King Arthur is toasting everybody, and a mysterious, you know, creature comes in, humanoid creature summoned by his mom. Basically comes in, challenges everybody. Sir Gawain answers, and the game is basically, it's like the Green Knight says, you know, whatever blow you give to me, I get to give back to you in a year.
And a day.
And Gawain chops his head off. And so, you know, basically he has a year now to prepare to receive that retribution or whatever.
Presumably thinking that if he chopped his head off, he wouldn't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
But instead, he picks up his head and just like, fucks off. He's like, all right, see you in a year and a day.
Yeah, very Sleepy Hollow-esque. Yeah, like, walks out with his severed head.
Rides away with laughing, holding his head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very Sleepy Hollow.
Yes. And so, basically, the gist of the film is Gawain venturing north, the people he meets along the way. It's his odyssey to deal with possibly his impending death, but either way, dealing with his ultimate fate. So, what were our thoughts on the film? We'll start with Sean.
Oh God. It was really good. I mean, it was well shot. I mean, had a lot of long drawn out walking, you know, and I mean, that is the plot of the first, I mean, it's essentially all of the second act is just him walking, right?
Yeah.
And that's what most of the shots were. I think it was really well shot. It was reminiscent of a lot of other stuff that came out of A24. You got a lot of Midsummer vibes. Yeah. I watched it video on demand at home, so I got to watch it with subtitles because, you know.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. I can't hear people speaking all the time.
Yeah.
And then also there's like really loud music, and then there's really low talking. So there was a ton of ominous music playing, mm-hmm. like the subtitle ominous music playing
all the
popped
time.
Up constantly.
Yeah,
which is, I think, perfect for this movie. It was just very... There was a vibe to it that was very like off-putting.
Yeah.
You know, you were always kind of uncomfortable with what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back to The Green Knight, the poem, it stuck very close to it. It had all the beats that you expect. In the poem itself, it's sort of yada, yada, yadas over whatever adventures he has before he gets to the castle of the
Lord and Lady.
The Lord and Lady. Yeah. Yeah. Essentially where he gets, pulled into a thirst trap, as the kids say, and has his
special effects.
Were they?
Oh, yeah. So he gets tempted into some shenanigans, but mm-hmm. He gets to kiss a dude on a horse.
Mm-hmm. That could have, and we could see a part two.
Yeah, the Green Knight too, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we just see what happens there. Like, the story just goes from that castle and the parties that ensue.
City under siege.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people really struggled with the ending.
I loved the ending.
I think a lot of people were like, oh, that was dumb. Or, mm-hmm. you know, the ironically, oh, it was a thinker's ending.
Yeah.
It really wasn't. It was, he had a flash before his eyes of what his life would be if he, you know, gave up and shit it out and just kind of ran away.
Yeah.
And then he owned up to his fate. And that was the whole point of it. He was trying to be tested.
Yeah.
If you haven't read the poem, the whole point was that his mom was trying to embarrass the king, right? Mm-hmm. King Arthur, and try and like make his knights look like a bunch of pussies that would, you know, renege on their honor whenever it came down to it.
No.
And he stood up and he took his licks and he was like prepared to die. And then he didn't.
Yeah.
And then he just sort of walked away.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the end.
Yeah. And basically, to me, this was the director kind of doing a riff on that with that one line.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, the people that were behind me in the theater, because I mean, I went, obviously, this is the time of COVID. And also, there was a great Oklahoma thunderstorm going on during that, which I thought was part of the whole movie because it was raining during the most of the movie. You're talking about good weather. It went perfectly with the movie because there was just thunder and rain going all the way through the movie. It's like, why is it always storming?
Yeah.
You know, the sun's out. Knocked out the power right when he finds the house with the ghost.
I like that.
Yeah.
Which was actually not part of the original poem, right?
No, it wasn't part of the original poem.
That the whole part with the ghost was not in the original.
Neither was the part of him getting mugged.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. That was
Which I think, yada yada is over that part.
Yeah, like it really yada yada is over all of his adventures up until he gets to the castle. But I think that to tie back to one of our previous episodes kind of remind me of the start of Escape from L.A., where as soon as he gets there, he loses his big gun and his trench coat and like all of his equipment. And he's just like, all right,
yeah,
all of that doesn't matter anymore. And I'm just kind of here to fend for myself.
Call me Gowan.
Call me sir.
But they did a great job. Like you say, with the cinematography, like I love felt like a very cold movie. And I will say it's a trade-off because you guys watched it at home. You get the subtitles. You get more of the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But the theater, you get that big scenery. This was a phenomenal movie to watch in the theater.
Yeah, like, the score was excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing for me. It's like, man, like, you know, it is the thing when you're watching at home, too. Like, there was this big wave of, like, how the music can get a little too loud, kind of going over, like, the vocals. But, you know, the score was, I thought, absolutely amazing. And again, I'm just reiterating what Sean said, but like the very Midsummer vibes.
Yeah.
The cinematography I thought was in like, and again, as is how naive I am, I don't know if it's because of CGI or the colors, but man, it seemed very like, vibrant's the wrong word, but like a lot of
colorful.
A definition of everything. Yeah. And I was like, man, I'm so dumb when it comes to that stuff. Like, is that CGI? It's like, I'm sure a little bit, little filters help
the
with
lighting
that.
of this movie was incredible.
But I was like, man, like, regardless of, because, you know, the storyline, and I said before we started, like, you know, there were some very long scenes, but they did them oddly the right way. Mm-hmm. Like, right, you said when he meets the, whatever it is, the traveler, the thieves, whatever, and they do that where he's lying on the ground and they show him. You know, and they do a 360
pan. And
I was just like,
skeleton.
In my mind, I was like, okay, what? I was like, this is going on forever, but this looks really fucking
cool. See, that was the first time they did the whole, because they used the same turning of the camera at the very end where it's like, all right, you fucked it up or, you know, you made the wrong decision, but they foreshadowed it in that.
Yeah,
scene right there. It's like
it's foreshadowing of him seeing
his own life.
Yeah, if you sit here and you wait for somebody to save you, you're gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, no, and that's what I was getting at. It's like it was just really, really well done. I was like, oh, what is this long ass scene? They show him alive, and I'm like, that's the first thing I thought of. I was like, oh, they're just showing him like you gotta go.
Yeah,
like you gotta do it on your own.
This is gonna be really weird. This is gonna be probably the strangest thing anybody compares this movie to, but little bit Apocalypse Now vibes.
I'm pretty sure I just compared it to Escape from LA.
Yeah.
So this is similar. It's like where, and you know, Apocalypse Now, Martin Sheen's character basically goes up the river to meet Colonel Kurtz, Marlon Brando, you know, for God knows what. And he, in his mind, it's probably death. Like Martin Sheen's going more than likely to his death to meet, you know, this crazy dude in the jungle. But along the way, he meets all these, you know, wacky people. He has all these crazy adventures. I mean, it's like he goes backwards in time as he ventures up the river. He meets all these, you know, different native tribes and all these just eccentric people and just gets in all these adventures. It's kind of like his odyssey up into Cambodia. And this is kind of like the Green Knight's odyssey to the Green Chapel or whatever, or Gowan's odyssey to the Green Chapel.
Well, it's, you know, like, they say there's only so many, like, stories. Like, there's, like, 9, like, actual storylines, and then everything else is just a riff off of that.
Yeah.
I mean, Sir Gawain's tale is just like the Odyssey.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tale where you're going and you're meeting all these people and you're searching for your honor and you're trying to reclaim something that was once yours. Yeah. Or mm-hmm.
Tale as old as time.
Tale as old as rhyme.
Time.
So when I saw it, there was, and again, it's been 3 fucking weeks since I've seen it, so it's not as fresh in my mind, but I had watched a YouTube video after that talking about it, and it was showed that there were 5 tenets, and then the Guinevere, Arthur's wife, is you know, doing a prayer as he's leaving and talking about the 5 things or virtue.
Well, and they had the pentagram, mm-hmm. symbolism,
which each point,
often imposed in the Round Table, and.
Yeah, which is, and I looked it up because
it's the 5 tenets.
Yeah, of it's generosity, courtesy, friendship, chastity, and piety. But he fails each one of those, and he almost fails the last one too because he tries to run away. And they show I'm not going to go over all of them, but at different points, like with the ghost, she's like, "Oh, will you go find my body?" And he's like, "What will you give me?" And she's like, "Are you not a knight, sir? Like, this is beneath you. Like,
why would you even ask me
that? Yeah. Why would you do this shit?" So, anyway, he fucks up during the entirety of the movie. A lot of it, you know, he eats the mushrooms. And so you don't know if the giants or the fox, the fox that talks later, is actually happening. But what I realized later is, as soon as I realized his mom was Morgan Le Fay, I'm like, oh, shit. She's the one who summoned or created the Green Knight. In the poem, the lord and lady he finds later
are the Green Knight.
The lord is the Green Knight in disguise. Mm-hmm. But you're not quite sure if she just, you know, summoned or conjured or, you know, created him.
Yeah.
But she was pissed that her son was, like, you know, all lackadaisical about trying to be a knight. She's like, he doesn't have a story. So she manufactured one for him to put him on. You know, Joseph Campbell has the whole hero's journey. Mm-hmm. This is the thing that pushed him out the door, made him go out and you know, become the knight. And, you know, the reason he's got the story is because his, you know, evil Morgan Le Fay, you know, kicked him out the door and made him go on this quest and made him like, all right, well, if you don't have a story, we'll make you one.
Yeah.
We'll force you into one. And so you can say it either way, is that she was doing it to fuck with Arthur and the Knights or to give her son better standing and what. Hopefully he would become king,
and that's kind of how I read it.
King.
In this version, I read it more like her trying to glorify herself.
Because when they gave the fox a voice at the end, it sounded like her.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
As well as the only other person that was blindfolded in it was at the Lord and Lady's place was the older lady,
the crone.
And they either said that was also Morgan Le Fay helping him on the road, and that she enchanted the lady to look like his lost love that would help test him even further.
Yeah.
So that's why she looked like, I don't know the
Esther?
Name. Alicia Vivekanders. I just know the actress's name.
Yeah.
Very, very kinky too.
Yeah. Also, she had
the best hand gibber in a belt.
Yeah,
she had the best monologue in the movie, talking about why the Green Knight is green and why the green will slowly take back over anything that humanity.
That was a great monologue.
Puts in. Yeah. And she holds like a rune or something or a stitching in her hand that shows up at least two other times during the film. It's been so long. I've forgotten the other two points I was going to make about that, but I just wanted to mention it.
A quick side note, I thought about a George Carlin routine during her
Seven speech. Dirty Words.
Shows you how weird my brain is. He had a thing back in the day about how people are trying to save the earth and save the planet. He's like, we're not trying to save the planet. The planet's going to be just fine. The planet survived way worse than humanity. He's like, everything will grow back. It'll grow over everything we built. We're trying to save humanity. We're trying to save people. Because it's like, if we all die out, all the grass will grow, the trees will grow, everything will just grow up over everything, and the planet will go on without us. So we're trying to save us. So
planet's trying to shake the fleas off this dog.
So I thought about that when she was talking about how it's like, you know, green is what will grow up over everything. It will just take over and consume.
Green is the color of death. Green will patina over all iron.
Yeah.
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 So, and that's weird, but that's what I thought of. I'll be honest, any medieval movie I watch, I think about the Holy Grail, Monty Python.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. It's like, I think about like the old crone talking about like shrubbery or whatever.
Oh, you know?
You will bring us shrubbery.
So, and maybe that's just me. And also, what is it in Holy Grail where they keep like whacking cats against the wall? Like,
yeah.
But anyway, Tay, your thoughts.
The one thing I did like about it that, you know, and again, it has some midsummer vibes, and I thought it was really, really cool. And again, I watched this very recently. Was like the puppet show. Like to me, I thought that was like for not knowing
it's a cool
really
narrative
and,
device.
And again, yeah, for
one
not
of the seasons, yeah.
For not reading any of the actual poem. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And quite frankly, when you look back on it, like, well, they kind of told you what was going to happen. Like, he got his head chopped off.
Yeah.
And it was like, so even when they were kind of showing when he ran away, I was like, man, I've already heard enough about how this movie had an interesting ending. I'm like, that, and knowing that it was kind of had midsummer vibes where like the seasons and like, it reminded me of kind of like the painting, the very beginning, a lot of foreshadowing in that painting. And I was like, yeah, this dude dead. And yeah. I was like, yeah, there's no way.
In midsummer, the artwork that's in the room that they're staying in literally depicts shot for shot what's going to happen in each part of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they kind of did that again with the puppet show. I thought it was great.
And the ending of both movies is pretty polarizing. I remember both movies, I can hear people saying like, what the fuck
is that?
So, yeah. I mean, people got up and left during midsummer. I mean, more than a few people.
I love
that movie. That was, Well, I forgot the guy's name already. I looked him up, but it seemed like he wasn't the director of Green Knight. Not like he was had a big slew of films either. No. Like of like mainly popular films.
This seemed like early in his career.
Yeah, that seems. Yeah, I think he was like 40, which makes me sad. But it was like, but you know, it looks like he. This is like one of his first, you know, big critically acclaimed films. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, but.
But I loved it. I really did.
Do you know J.J. Abrams had one of the highest revenue movies of a new actor?
Oh, new director. Yeah.
Ever. Highest budget fun director.
Fact. Yeah.
Mission Impossible 3. Go listen to our other episode.
Exactly. What was I going to say? I had a thing. Closing thoughts. Anybody?
I 100% loved it. Me too. You know, from just a cinematic point of view, and I think that, you know, I will say I did really, really love King Arthur with old Clive Owen just because I love that lore shit. Like, I just love it. And this one, I was just – it might have gone a little – it wasn't kind of like that. It I don't know. It was different, but in a great way. Yeah. Like, I thought it was really, really, really good.
It was funny because Joe – now I remember what I was going to say. Joe read my review at ToddWoffordMovies.com. Mm. And she was like, you use a lot of big words. It's like, I was really excited to talk about a good movie. I haven't watched a good movie in a while.
It had been a while since I've seen a movie that really, like, resonates.
It's like I get to talk about adult themes and, like, actual, like, mature, like, you know, real, like, solid content. This is fun.
Yeah.
And this is one of those films where there's always those films that come along like, oh my God, you have to see this. It's, You just have to witness it. Yeah. And it's one of those films you watch once and you're like, I get it. I don't ever need to watch it again. This is not. Like, yeah. I could totally watch this film again.
Yeah. Totally.
I would revisit this in 5-10 years. Like, I'd watch it now.
Yeah.
Just because it had such a sense of foreboding throughout the whole thing. But and I kept thinking that there was going to be a weird jump scare or some shit. And so I was like, you know, hold my breath. I'm like, okay, some shitty shit going to happen right here. No. Okay. All right. Good deal. But I guess the story continues after that, because the green sash in it was supposed to be like a magical deal where like you couldn't die or couldn't get killed while it was on.
Yeah.
And so at the end, he takes it off. He's like, all right, fine. I'll face my destiny as a true knight. And then he does the, you know,
it's off a, it's with a his head. Physical representation of his clinging to life and his clinging to, his old
yeah.
way. It's, you know, rebirth is a big factor and a big theme, and him throwing away the yoke of that belt mm-hmm. was him basically being willing to be reborn or being mm-hmm. willing to accept his fate and accept honor and the tenets of knighthood.
Exactly.
Yeah. Step right. outside what's comfortable, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. And in his foreshadowing or in his, you know, foresight of what his life would be if he were to run away, it was also like him hanging out in a room waiting for the sword of Damocles to fall down. And he pulls the belt off and his head just plops off,
yeah.
you know? And yeah. I think that's what people didn't really like. It didn't click with people that like, that was him imagining like, I'm going to die anyway.
Yeah.
Might as well die with honor. And they mm-hmm. pulls
something.
So I guess yeah. in the poem mm-hmm. after that, the knight is, you know, just kind of fucks with him, lets him go
yeah,
off.
He just goes
and
home
then he and just goes home yeah. and then he's like, hey, I did the thing.
And then so everybody in the round table starts wearing green as a symbol of knighthood.
Exactly. Yeah. As a reminder of not breaking a vow.
Yeah.
And shit, I wish we had filmed this 3 weeks ago when I was real smart about this.
This has been another episode of Cinema Vino.
It has.
It has okay. indeed.
It has.
Sean Jordan, Travis Budd, Taylor Owens.
Hello.
Glad to be here.
Tune in. Next time we're going to do The Bourne Legacy and then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 to wrap up our sequel
Kino.
Series.
Kino.
Fuck. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nice.
Yes. And we're going to be sponsored by Papa John's. Not their pizza, but the Dillas.
Yes.
A Papa Dilla.
Yeah, this will be Cinema Dillas for about Ooh. At least a week. anyway, yeah, check out those. And then we're going to start our next series, which should be some good stuff. And we may have some surprises in September for you.
Are you going to be, we're doing, correct me if I'm wrong, like Skinamax films? Mm-hmm. Like
we're going to do Red Shoe Diaries and
Emmanuel?
Emmanuel on Special.
Yeah.
Emmanuel, yeah. Queen of the Galaxy.
And we're going to do a couple of episodes covering Cash Cab, which should be pretty good. So tune Ooh. In for those.
And Fake Taxi.
And Fake Taxi.
The crossover of those two seasons. That was my favorite.
It's going to be just a pop culture paradise.
So, you know, guys, can we wrap this up?
Out with a bang and in with a whimper.
Yeah.
So
he's got places to be.
We'll see you guys real soon.
Bye.
To learn more about Cinema Vino, check out our website at cinemavino.net. You can also listen, rate, subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you choose to listen to your podcasts. My movie reviews are available at toddwoffordmovies.com.